From the halls of every school in Michigan, this is School Talks on 760 WJR with Dr. Robert Livernoy. Sponsored by Wakely Associates, Plant Moran, Real Point, Collins and Plaha, O'Reilly Rancilio PC Attorneys at Law, Clark Construction, and by Must Construction Careers. Now, take your seats. Class is in session. Here's Robert.
As we sit right here in the middle of summer, this week we're joined by Brian Peters and Vicki Wilson from Care Solace, from the Chippewa Valley Coalition for Youth and Families, Dr. Charlene McGunn and Marla Lemley. And rounding out the program, we'll chat with Tom Benevich, the Chief Executive Officer of McKennyVinto.org. All this and more coming up. This is School Talks on 760 WJR.
This is School Talks on WJR with Dr. Robert Livernoy.
Joining us now in the program is the Director of Partnerships for Care Solace, Brian Peters, and Education Consultant Vicki Wilson. Welcome to the program.
Good morning, Robert. Thanks for having us.
Hello. Thanks for having us. We're glad to be here.
I appreciate your time. For our School Talks listeners, I've had Brian and Vicki on the program earlier this school year talking about the services that Care Solace provides to school districts, and I've heard lots of good things from many people I know in the business, and I thought it would be important to come back and chat with you to see how the year has gone. So, most important, Brian, let's start with all of the instability and discussion that's going on at the federal level. Has any of the federal budget cuts to education or restructuring impacted your community's ability to support students and families, especially regarding mental health needs?
Yeah, so anytime we're talking about budget cuts or any reduction to services that are being offered, there's always the potential to have some level of disruption or impact on our school communities. And what that essentially means for our superintendents is that they're going to be asked to do more with less. And so we know that in the employment field in general, that one of the biggest costs that an employer incurs is labor. And so looking at internal staffing, what is your internal staffing model? From a compliance standpoint, do you have enough people to do the functions that are required to service the students at a high level? All those things have to be taken into consideration. And one of the most effective ways for a school system to address budget cuts is looking for outside resources to be able to fill in and plug in some of those gaps. And the beauty about Care Solace is we can do a lot of that work without interfering with an existing multi-tier system of support model. We can plug in and fill in gaps as needed, making it more cost effective for school systems while still receiving an extremely high quality and high level of service for students, families, and school staff.
Mm-hmm. And help our School Talks listeners understand, in what ways are school systems uniquely positioned to understand and address the needs of students and their families?
Yeah, that's a terrific question. So if you think about our school systems, there is no community entity that knows more about what's going on with our students, their families, and the general needs of the community than our school system. The federal government reported that at any given time, about 24% of people experience some type of mental health, diagnosable mental health issue. And so when our school systems are looking at our kids each day, they're evaluating their behaviors, they're looking at things that are taking place, and they're looking at maybe impacts on those kids that go back to things that are going on in the home. Our school systems are incredibly uniquely positioned to be able to look at early intervention and work to be able to support those families. But the reality of it is, and the unfortunate thing is, that our school systems are not designed to be mental health organizations, and they're not funded to be able to support the type of work that needs to be done at a higher level. So looking at local area providers, our hospitals, our clinics, our private practices is essential to be able to wrap around services to not only look at meeting the needs within the school system, but looking at the broader needs of the family and helping address the needs so that the students' needs are being met, the family's needs are being met, and even to a broader extent, all of the staff needs are being met as well.
You know, it does demonstrate the challenges that schools face in providing adequate support. And Vicki Wilson, in your experience in consulting, how do these challenges get exacerbated without sufficient funding or staffing?
As a previous school principal, I realized that we don't have all the resources that we need set up in the school to provide the amount of mental health care to our students that our kids need. And even having counselors and school social workers, their focus really is on school success for the students. And we can just touch the surface, I would say, at the school level. The most troubled and the most disruptive kids will get that attention, but what about the rest of them? I also believe mental health impacts students when anybody in the family is struggling with mental health. And so while it may not be the student that has that root need, it could be someone else in the family. And one thing I really appreciate about Care Solace when I was in that principal position is that we were able to support anybody in the family that had a need, because that was impacting children and their learning.
And, you know, as an extension of that, why do you think law enforcement is so often called to respond to mental health crises? And in your experience as a principal and in consulting, what are the limitations of this approach?
I believe that, in my experience, is that law enforcement would get involved when there's an untreated trauma with the child that's presenting in their behaviors. And we usually, when we have some trauma, we're going to present that through internalizing behaviors or externalizing behaviors, or sometimes both. But it's those kids that have the externalizing behavior present as violent or dangerous. And that's when we get the police involved. And police also aren't mental health professionals either. So police are responding to that violent behavior or the dangerous behavior or the aggressive behavior, and they're also not getting to the root cause behind it. So that trauma ends up going on untreated, and that mental health condition that's present is not being attended to or fixed. And then the really sad thing about that, I think, is then students get labeled. They may have a juvenile record, and that becomes that self-fulfilling prophecy. They don't believe that they're good. And that really is that beginning of that school-to-prison pipeline. So I feel like we're going down the wrong track when we do that, when we're going law enforcement route versus mental health support.
We're currently with Brian Peters and Vicki Wilson from Care Solace, an organization dedicated to providing mental health support and access for students in schools. Brian Peters, you mentioned that the real issue in mental health care is access rather than the number of professionals that may or may not be available. And in your experience, what are some of the most significant barriers to accessing mental health care?
Yeah, so barriers is a huge problem that we face. And one of the barriers that we have is just a limited knowledge of providers that are available. Most of us know about the large hospital networks or some of the large county organizations, but there are so many providers that go beyond those bigger providers that pop up to the top of the search engine. And in reality, a lot of those bigger providers tend to get the bulk share of the phone calls to provide service and support. So what we do is we look at the ratio, the county ratio. Take Wayne County, for example, or take any of the surrounding counties in your area. We look at the number of providers relative to the number of residents in the community. And Michigan in general has done an exceptional job providing enough resources, enough providers to be able to meet the needs of most counties. But again, the reality is that most people are looking at the top of the search engine, and they're not looking at all the other resources that are available. And then for families, when they're making these phone calls, they have to go through the process of looking at, can I financially afford this? Do I have insurance that will cover this? Am I going to need sliding scale? Do I need a provider that will take me even if I'm uninsured and have limited means? What about a language preference? We all know that beyond English and Spanish, there are a lot of languages out there that families need support for. So how do I find a provider that is able to meet my needs and support me in my preferred language? And then sitting across from that person, if it's not a comfortable experience, if that family, especially a child 3 years of age to 17 years of age, if they don't relate to the person sitting across from them and it doesn't feel like a comfortable experience, what good is the appointment? You might get there and that child might look across from them and go, this person does not get me. They don't understand what I'm going through. They don't understand what it's like to be in my community. So the child shuts down. So looking at the provider and making sure it's a good fit from a demographic standpoint too, is it a good gender, racial, religious, or ethnic match for that family? So that provider truly can meet the family's needs and meet them where they're at. Those are all incredibly important things for a family to be able to navigate that on their own, or for even a school system to help a family narrow down that list of providers that really meet their needs. Can be a very challenging, a very challenging thing for them. So we look at that as our obligation and responsibility to our communities that we serve to really make sure that the provider that we're connecting them with is a good fit and that we can get them timely access to care.
So Brian and Vicki, I need to take a short break to hear a word from our sponsors. When we come back, I'd like to dig a little deeper into some of the challenges families face, especially as it relates to geography and language and that, and also some of the ways you work with families to navigate the system. So stay right there. This is School Talks on 760 WJR.
This is School Talks on WJR with Dr. Robert Livernoy, sponsored by Wakely Associates, Plant Moran Real Point, Collins & Plaha, O'Reilly Rancilio PC Attorneys at Law, Clark Construction, and by Must Construction Careers. Once again at the head of the class, Dr. Livernoy.
We're back here on School Talks. Joining us is Brian Peters and Vicki Wilson from Care Solace. Before the break, we were talking about some of the factors that affect families' ability to actually get the mental health services they need. And Vicki Wilson, how do factors like insurance, maybe geography, language, and what I guess we would call provider compatibility, how do they contribute to the challenges families face in actually getting the mental health care they need?
Yeah, I actually think having to navigate the system is so frustrating to families that oftentimes they don't finish going through the process and actually don't get to the point of being appointed into care. It's almost like putting together a puzzle of best fit for this unique human being in your house that needs some support. And that's what Care Solace's work is to find best matches for the needs of this individual and then follow up after the appointment to make sure that it was a good fit. And one of the reasons that I work with Care Solace and try to spread the word of what they're doing is in my role as a principal. When we partnered with Care Solace, we were able to utilize them for all of our students and their families, but it also included us as staff and our family members too. And I have one of my three kids was really struggling pretty bad and had a wonderful therapist, but was having some suicidal ideations and even a plan for suicide. And what I needed for him was medication so that he can work through the things that he needed to work through in therapy and that he, you know, was ready to face those things. So I utilized Care Solace for my son, and it was really great because I realized that they were able to dig deeper into ensuring the language fit. But they even asked, do you have a religious preference? You know, do you have a gender preference for who will be your provider? And I was able to say at that time that for him, he was struggling with some gender dysphoria, and I needed somebody that would be an ally to him. We had previously seen a different psychologist that really was a bad fit for him and asked him some really uncomfortable questions. So it was in that moment that I realized that fit is so critical. And I think a lot of people give up on the system because they don't find fit. And that's what Care Solace will do for a family.
You know, as an extension of Vicki's point and her personal experience, Brian, can you describe for our School Talks listeners actually how Care Solace works with the school staff, maybe a first responder, to help a family actually get the mental health care that they need? What would be a good way to explain that path so they understand what to expect?
Yeah, so if you think about the school system in general, normally your student services staff are going to be your school social workers, your school counselors, your school psychologists, maybe for some of the larger school districts, your mental health navigators, who look at the services that are being provided by the school district and what is being done for that child and if those needs are being met internally. And for a lot of kids, those needs are being met internally. The district does a remarkably good job being able to put together a plan and provide an adequate level of support. But for some kids, the reality is that what a school system can do or what they have the capacity to do is not enough to meet their needs. And it goes beyond what a school system really is designed to do or set up to do. And so the school system then looks to outside providers, whether it be those hospitals, those clinics, those private practices, and they look at all the different resources that are available. And for school systems that don't use Care Solace, that really requires their social workers or their mental health navigators to look at their resource sheet, help families evaluate which providers might be a good fit, maybe go through and dig a little deeper to see which providers can meet language needs beyond English and Spanish, which ones from an insurance standpoint might be able to be accessible and meet the families where they're at. And that process takes a very significant or inordinate amount of time for internal staff to not only connect with parents and ask those questions, but also then connect with providers and try to find providers that align with the family's needs. And where Care Solace comes in is through a very quick 60-second process. They talk with the family and they determine whether or not the family is open and receptive to receiving outside services. And if the family says that, yeah, we're open to anything, we just want to make sure that we get our child the help and support that they need, they provide a warm handoff to Care Solace, and we connect with the families to go through a very quick intake questionnaire, really get to know the needs of the family, try to figure out how to meet them where they're at, and then look at all the available resources, all the available providers that are in the entire community, and we narrow down ones that are not only aligned with what the family's preferences are, but then can meet them within a timely manner. Right now, the Michigan State average hovers around 16 to 17 weeks to be able to provide an appointment. And since Care Solace launched in the state of Michigan in 2021, we've averaged fewer than 10 days to get families seen by a local area provider within 15, 20 minutes of their home residence to be able to access them quickly, efficiently. That process, we try to streamline that and really make sure that we are advocating on behalf of our families with partnership from our school systems so that that collaboration is really freeing up time for our school systems and also meeting the needs of the families in the most effective way possible.
Your description really and truly answers the question I was going to ask that relates to how does Care Solace's work differ from the traditional model? And your statistic about 16 to 17 weeks a few years ago to where you are now fewer than 10 days, really, I think there's an old saying, necessity is the mother of invention. And when you look back at the last 3 to 5 years in schools and the amount of senseless school threats that kids are putting out on social media, and which then boxes schools into a corner of keeping kids out of school, it just demonstrates to the highest degree how important the kind of work you're doing. You really are a conduit that helps families get to where they need to go in a reasonable amount of time, because my experience has shown me that when you have a student out of school for 3-4 months, not only is it a challenge for them to come back, they're that much farther behind, and many of them are coming back with a label because everyone knows why they were out of school.
To your point, when we hear about disruptive behavior or any type of behavioral issues, what we are really trying to figure out is what is going on in that child's life that is causing them to be frustrated or have these outbursts, because there really aren't bad kids. There are kids that are in bad situations, or there are kids that are their behaviors are a cry for help, right? So if we can not only meet the needs of the child and try to figure out what's going on in their life, maybe it's anxiety, maybe it's depression, maybe they're being bullied. So much of what we see now are kids being bullied, and that results in disruptive behaviors because it's a cry for help, right? And sometimes it's maybe not even necessarily directly related to the child, but maybe something going on in their household, like their parents are getting a divorce, and that's having a huge impact on their mindset, what they're going through, or maybe there's medical issues in the family, and that's causing a huge burden on that child. But if you look at disruptive behaviors, it's not necessarily that that child is saying, I'm a bad kid. It's I'm having a bad time. I'm going through some bad things. And so if we can be a part of that process to help work through that process with them and also their family, we do believe that we can work toward getting them in a better place and reduce some of those behavioral or disruptive issues as well.
So with that, I want to thank you, Brian Peters and Vicki Wilson, for the continued great work you're doing with CareSolace. And as always, keep up the good work.
Thank you, Robert.
Thanks, Robert.
After the break, we'll chat with our friends from the Chippewa Valley Coalition for Youth and Families. Stay right there. We'll be back right after this.
School Talks on WJR with Dr. Robert Livernoy.
Joining us now in the program is the Executive Director for the Chippewa Valley Coalition for Youth and Families, Dr. Charlene McGunn, and from Chippewa Valley High School, Marla Lemley, a Student Assistant Specialist. Welcome to the program, ladies.
Thank you.
So we've had Dr. McGunn on the program this past school year discussing lots of issues around student substance abuse and vaping and the support the coalition provides them. And I thought it'd be a good idea to bring them back, especially as we're moving into the summer months, to revisit this charge and the importance of it. So, Dr. McGunn, I'd like to start with you. Can you describe the mission of the Coalition for Youth and Families and how both high schools in Chippewa Valley, how they contribute to achieving the mission?
The Coalition is in Mid-Macomb County, and we join Chippewa Valley schools, parents, and community in promoting resilient youth who are alcohol, marijuana, and other drug-free, as well as efforts to prevent youth suicide. Given that our focus is youth, our youth members are an extremely important part of the success of the coalition in achieving our goals. We now have a total of about 200 students that are organized into coalition teen councils at Dakota and Chippewa Valley High School. And they're carrying the drug prevention and messages and mental health support mission forward at their high schools, but also with younger students in middle and elementary schools, as well as in the community.
And what types of programming for drug prevention and mental health do these coalition teen councils create for their respective schools and community?
Our coalition teen councils at Dakota and Chippewa Valley High School are involved in a broad range of activities in their schools and beyond, in the creation of showcases, posters, brochures. They also address mental health issues through health fairs, announcements, lunchroom tables where they pass out information. They are very involved in youth suicide prevention. They engage in activities that bring students and parents together. They facilitate organized conversation groups.
So a question for Student Assistant Specialist Marla Lemley at Chippewa Valley High School. Marla, given what Dr. McGunn has laid out, how do you recruit and engage such a large and diverse group of students for the Coalition Teen Councils?
Well, regarding recruiting, before they even come to high school, we begin to make connections with the students when they're in the eighth grade by visiting their middle schools. We do teen panels that she mentioned. We promote the Coalition Teen Council. We present lessons about resisting peer pressure. So that we lay the groundwork for those connections early. And then during high school, we recruit mostly just by being very visible in the school because we do so many activities. And we're just seen everywhere throughout the school, whether it's a showcase or the lunchroom table or whatever the event is that we have going on. And so we recruit during that as well when kids come up and say, hey, you know, how do I get to be a part of this? And then regarding engaging everyone, specifically like at the summer camps, we do small group activities where the executive board members of our club, of our council, will take 10 students to each two executive board members and do the different activities that way so that they can make more connections together and have that small group feel. And then we'll also do some large group things as well. But for the most part, a lot of it's done in the small groups.
Mm-hmm. So we're currently with Dr. Charlene McGunn and Marla Lemley from Chippewa Valley Schools, and they are committed to drug prevention and mental health programming for students. And I understand, Dr. McGunn, that there is a summer camp, now that we're a summer is upon us here, there's a summer camp for these teen councils for new members. And I was wondering if you could share with us a bit of what students will experience this summer in that camp.
Well, the primary goal is to bring eighth graders in into connection with students, and they're presenting research-based information on the negative effects of youth use of alcohol, marijuana, vaping, and other drugs. They're presenting information on mental health so that they can act as a resource to peers and participate in the broad range of programming that I just mentioned. And in addition, what we really do attempt to do is to create leaders.
So as an extension of that, Marla Lemley, in what ways do the current members of the council participate and help plan these activities in the summer camp?
Actually, the executive board officers, with guidance from myself and my co-moderator, plan the summer camp activities and the themes and all of that. And then those officers, which would be the president and the co-vice president, present the ideas to the rest of the executive board, which is made up of 18 members. And they go through each day of the summer camp and get feedback from them, share ideas, suggest any changes. So they're really the ones that are creating the camp.
And you know, this camp really helps dispel the myth that schools are only in session 9 months a year. Anyone connected to schools will tell you they run year-round, and this is a great example of the use of summer to continue support for students while school is not in session. And that's all the time we have for today, but I want to thank you, Dr. Charlene McGunn and Marla Lemley from Chippewa Valley Schools, and all the work you're doing to help children. And keep up the good work.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Tom Menevich from McKinneyVento.org is next. We'll be back right after this.
School Talks on WJR is sponsored by Wakely Associates, Plant Moran, Real Point, Collins and Plaha, O'Reilly Rancilio PC Attorneys at Law, Clark Construction, and by Must Construction Careers. Now let's get back to class. Once again, your host, former Superintendent Dr. Robert Livernoy.
Joining us now on the program is Mr. Tom Benevich, who is the Chief Executive Officer of McKinneyVento.org, an organization committed to help provide training to school officials and others on how to help students who are homeless. Welcome to the program, Tom.
Thank you, Dr. Livernoy. It's always a pleasure to chat with you.
I appreciate it. So I think it's important, although we had you on the program last fall, I think it's important for us to help our listeners understand what is the McKinneyVento Homeless Assistance Act?
Yeah, the McKinneyVento Homeless Assistance Act, it's a federal law that ensures children and youth experiencing homelessness have equal access to free and appropriate public education. This includes the right to enrollment, attendance, and ultimately their success within their school.
So, you know, in the last few months, there have been lots of stories and discussions and political debate over the proposed changes at the U.S. Department of Education. And has any of that activity altered the core requirements of the McKinney-Vento Act?
No. Actually, all of the recent changes or executive actions at the Department of Ed, they have not changed the core requirements or protections of the McKinney-Vento Act. Since it is all set by federal law, this can be only changed by Congress. So I'm glad you brought that up. So this will not affect this whatsoever.
And I know school superintendents over the past couple of months have dealt with, I guess I would call it misinformation in terms of memos they're getting either from the federal government or supporting agencies on what is allowed, what isn't allowed, and so on. And I appreciate that clarification, just given the effect it has on children. So, from last fall, how does the rate of students experiencing homelessness in our area, the Tri-County area, how does that compare to the national average? And what factors do you think contribute to the difference of us here locally versus the national average?
Yeah, for sure. So the rate of students experiencing homelessness is 2.3%, which is below the national average of 3%. Of overall enrolled student population. So that's what we're seeing right now.
And, you know, in some of my research that I've done, and I think you could shed some light on this, the graduation rate for students who have experienced homelessness is what I would consider significantly lower than for students who do not. You have a thought or a comment on that based on the training that you're providing school officials?
Oh, yeah. So if you look at the state overall, graduation rates across the board are a little over 81% of all students enrolled. But it is staggering to see that the graduation rate drops down to 58% if you look at those students that are experiencing homelessness. That's why it's so imperative that training and awareness is out there. So these liaisons who work so hard within the school districts can go and provide these services that are readily available. It's just the event of, you know, finding those students that are in need and then getting those services to them. So that's a 30% difference, which is drastic. So our goal is to obviously chip away at that through identification and helping these kiddos.
And, you know, to that point, if you ask any teacher in a classroom, one of their greatest challenges is having students who come to school ready to learn. And when you consider how old our school model is, especially in Michigan and in the United States, you know, your typical 6-7 period day, there are lots of assumptions in that model that children come to school ready to learn. And the statistic you cite really sheds a strong light on how disruptive homelessness is for families, regardless of how many times they're homeless or at what age they become homeless. And I'm curious, are you seeing any trends right now with the number of students experiencing homelessness in our area? And how does that trend compare nationally?
Yeah, nationally, there's an upward trend in the number of students experiencing homelessness. And our Tri-County area is following that exact same trend right now. So you're exactly right. You know, to get to the classroom and do, you know, appropriate learning, there could be such a ripple effect that happens prior to that when kids are struggling, you know, and not getting their basic needs. It could be an extreme challenge.
And I understand a strategy you've employed to help combat this is a slogan known as In Class Is Where It's At, and it's a campaign to help reduce absenteeism. Can you tell us a bit about how that's going to operate here in the Tri-County area?
Yeah, it's a wonderful thing that's happening in the Tri-County area right now. And basically, the campaign connects families with supports and resources to encourage and improve in-person learning. So the Tri-County area is spreading the word across these spaces through billboards, radio ads, television, social media. And really the goal and the aim is to inspire students and families to see school as a place for growth, creativity, and ultimately lifelong success. But we're super grateful for the hard work that Wayne, Oakland, and Macomb counties are putting into this program, and we're eager to share results and progress as we continue.
So we're currently with Tom Menevich, the Chief Executive Officer of McKinneyVento.org, a group that's dedicated to providing support to schools and officials and helping homeless students. Tom, I want to follow up on your recognition of the Tri-County and how important is their partnership in training and identifying students who are experiencing homelessness? And more importantly, what impact does that have on protecting student rights during what I guess we would call housing transitions?
Yeah, for sure. So creating awareness and training the staff within schools, because it is required that all staff members have an awareness training around what McKinneyVento is so they can connect with their McKinneyVento liaisons, which is also a required role. But then also the community partners, as you mentioned, everyone who surrounds the community that helps provide different services to these families in need. This is really helpful in the identification, and it is really the first crucial step to help ensure that their rights and protections stay intact during these housing transitions, because number one, they must be identified. And then there are so many services that are available, but the only way they can get those services is first to identify and then very discreetly and confidentially provide them those services to get them their needs met.
So what does the local data show about the impact of training staff on their ability to identify students who might be experiencing homelessness? How does that help?
Yeah, well, we have data, and we know that when districts train their staff, and within the district, that's everyone that interacts with the kids. That's everyone from your superintendents to your counselors to your teachers, coaches, after school staff, et cetera. We have the data that shows identification goes up. Where there is identification, support and stabilizing factors can now be employed. So together, these help reduce that chronic absenteeism and help to move students toward and across that graduation stage. That's the goal. So this training creates what we like to call an army of awareness within your schools. We need everyone in the schools to be a set of eyes and ears for your liaisons so these services can be provided.
Fantastic. Tom Menevich, the Chief Executive Officer of McKinneyVento.org. I appreciate you taking the time to update us on the hard work you're doing with our schools. And as always, keep up the good work.
Thank you very much, Dr. Livernois, and we appreciate all your support around supporting our kiddos that are experiencing homelessness.
School may be out right now, but hunger, homelessness, and a host of mental health challenges are in full swing for students this summer. I'd like to thank our guests for their efforts in supporting them and doing the right thing by children as school's out. That's all the time we have for today. But remember, there are two ways to spell one and three ways to spell two. Till next time, this has been School Talks on 760 WJR.